delicate balance, though, because the rotational equipping strategy that we describe in the report and that the Army is largely in line with is really predicated on that those forces being deployed and coming back into the force and having to be rebuilt as they come out of Afghanistan and as they've already come out of Iraq, and as they perhaps don't have forces deploying. It's a little unclear whether that rotational strategy will persist in the way that it has over the last few years. Nonetheless, it's still very consistent with what we're talking about in the report.
So before we get to the equipping strategy, describe briefly what rotational strategy actually means.
For a number of years during the Cold War, the Army was based on essentially mass mobilization. So a very large army, a standing army, that had many units all equipped, ready to deploy it on a moment's notice for all intents and purposes. Nowadays, because of the long-term sustained deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan, lower numbers in the entire force, but still considerable numbers, the Army has had to generate those forces over and over and over again. So at any one time, only a portion of the Army is actually deployed, say about one-third. Another one-third of that Army is just returning from deployments, so they're trying to get themselves resituated back in states. And then another third is actually preparing to deploy after the current force that's in there. So all the units are then rotating through this three-phased Orphogen process.
So only the deployed ones actually need the equipment to prosecute war at a given time, in other words?
Well, what we tried to show in the report and through our analysis is that the forces that are deployed certainly need 100% of their equipment. I mean, they're fighting with the equipment that they were built to fight with. Forces in earlier phases of Orphogen, they may not need 100%. Now, that's subject to two things. One is those first forces earlier in the Orphogen cycle need equipment to train. And for some pieces of equipment, some units, that means they need 100% of that equipment. However, for other pieces of equipment and other units, they may not need 100%. They might be able to get prepared and trained with far fewer pieces of equipment. And then as they move through the Orphogen cycle, they may need more and more as they get to larger and larger training events in order to deploy and eventually have 100% of their equipment.
So in the old Cold War model, say, let's take the example of, trucks. There was enough truck capacity to deploy everybody all at once. And so what you're saying now is those people returning home would not need that truck capacity. And those training to be drivers would need a limited number of trucks. And so we'd only need enough trucks for deployment for the actually deployed. And therefore, some efficiencies could be realized across the equipment needs.
Yes, that's essentially it. As forces return from theater, for some pieces of major equipment, they don't use it, and in a lot of cases, they can't actually use it because the unit is being disbanded. Folks are going to school and get education, other types of smaller unit training or even individual training. They're not using some pieces of equipment. So to look for those pieces of equipment and those units that, say, aren't really used in the earliest phases of Orphogen and try to reduce those as a way to try to find those efficiencies. Now, this is all really contingent on being able to be very flexible and very adaptive in how units are equipped. No longer do units simply are given equipment for the rest of their the time that unit is around. Instead, this equipment needs to be constantly moving between units. So there are attending costs with that movement, which also need to be taken into consideration.
And also, don't you have to consider the fact that some equipment needs to be going back to the depots and the places in the Midwest where they rebuild some of the equipment and repair it and get it redeployed? You'd need a certain amount of overlap just for the stuff that wears out or gets damaged.
Absolutely. In our analysis, we took into consideration a lot of those movements. So as equipment moves into units, as it goes into theater, it may be lost in theater because of military action or because of maintenance issues. And then as it returns, it does have to get rebuilt a lot of ways, in a lot of different ways, and maybe even upgraded. So all of those are different ways of calculating the total number of pieces of equipment that the Army needs to meet that rotational strategy. So it's not a straightforward calculation of just taking all of the units and, say, taking all the equipment they could ever potentially use and just adding all that up. Now it's a much more dynamic situation with all these units moving around and a much more complicated calculation.
We're speaking with Christopher Pernin, Senior Scientist and Director of the Force Development and Technology Program at the Rand Arroyo Center. And so who did you do this report for, and what has the reception been?
This report was done a few years back now for the Army G8, who's the budgeter and programmer. And this was a broader study to try to figure out how can the Army find efficiencies without reducing capacity and capability. It's very easy to find places to just cut the Army. And I mean that in sort of a very terse way, in that one can cut the military, but typically those cuts come with attending capacity changes or capability changes in very significant ways. What we are challenged with is, well, can the Army somehow find some efficiencies where they're necessarily not cutting their capability and capacity, which is a much tougher problem.
And what's the reception been? Do you think the Army feels itself as if it can adopt this flexible equipping strategy?
I think right now the Army is moving in this direction, and certainly their 2012 equipping strategy is in line with some of these findings that we found. They definitely have articulated a need to move towards a rotational equipping strategy much more aligned with the Arfogen cycle.
So where would this savings from this flexibility be realized? Would it be in the acquisition budget?
That's a good question. And one of the things we tried to do in the report is to try to link, well, if in fact you want to manage your equipment in a certain way that we've described, where do you actually get those savings? And the savings won't necessarily be obvious. So we wanted to look for places where there's new equipment being purchased that potentially the Army could avoid purchasing, where there's new equipment being replaced that they could perhaps avoid having to replace it, and then look for places where there's, you know, increased O&M costs or high O&M costs where you might be able to avoid having to do those. The key here is that these may not be technically savings, but these may be costs that are avoided. And there's a slight difference in the way that that could be interpreted then.
So it would be too soon to tighten the belt on the acquisition budgets at this point, say for 2013 or 2014, with respect to equipment?
I think these would have to be very deliberate decisions on the Army's part to make sure that they're not only finding the savings in the correct spot, but also have the associated mechanisms to actively manage these fleets and actively incorporate the additional secondary costs, perhaps, of moving equipment around. There's probably one other sort of key point, is that there always needs to be a minimum amount of equipment necessary. There's really two things that the Army needs equipment for, and that's one for training, and one is for large-scale or deployments. So those kinds of constraints on the system are really important to take into consideration, and they have really sensitive assumptions that go along with them, which is, what's the worst-case scenario for the Army? They need that kind of equipment there. And that's a very controversial thing to figure out. And some of the assumptions that we make in the report try to go into, you know, different ways of interpreting that worst-case scenario.